Microsoft has announced its end of support for Windows 7 happening 14th January 2020, and that date is looming quickly. If your business is still using Windows 7, the time is now to begin planning for the operating system's end of life. If you want to upgrade your environment to Windows 10 and you're not sure how to do it, contact local reseller Pinnacle today on 011-265-3000 or visit its website for more information.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the AfriCast, the first for a new decade and a new year. My name is Brendan Lotz. Joining me today is Robin Chetty.
How's it going?
And Dion Duplessis, who we haven't spoken to in a very long time.
It has been a while. Hello, everyone.
Right. So, before we get into what we've been up to over the break, we just want to touch on some news very quickly, starting with load shedding, I think, is
back.
Did it really go anywhere?
Well, it was one way for like 2 weeks.
I don't know. I had numerous power outages at my place for like an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours at a time. So load shedding didn't actually leave. It was just power outages instead of load shedding, which was great. But yeah, load shedding has returned. It returned at the weekend on Saturday, I believe. Late at night on Saturday, they declared load shedding would start at 10 o'clock. And that persisted through till Sunday. And then there was no load shedding on Monday during the day. However, there was no load shedding on Monday, but late on Tuesday afternoon, Eskom issued a power alert stating that load shedding would take place from 1 o'clock this morning or Wednesday morning till 6 o'clock on Wednesday morning. The reason that they gave was, in order to minimize the impacts of load shedding on South Africans, load shedding is scheduled at night to maximize electricity availability during the working day. But there was another reason that they gave, which just was very odd, which was in order to give matriculants an opportunity to receive their matric results, the implementation of stage 2 load shedding has been delayed to 1 o'clock on Wednesday morning. This decision will also allow the matriculants enough time to make their way home safely in order to plan their activities. Which is just like, what? Why? Why even make mention of it? To me, like, I read this and I was like, is Eskom just like playing the hero card here? Like, we're going to delay load shedding so that the matrix can get their results. That's just what it felt like to me. And then today as well, Eskom has said that there is a high chance of, or high probability of, overnight load shedding at stage 2. So yeah, load shedding is still with us. I don't foresee a period in time where load shedding won't be with us.
Well, I mean, it did trend on Google search in the past decade.
Yeah, I mean, do we expect anything different in the next decade?
Well, I'd expect it to stick around for quite a bit. I follow a guy on Twitter called Chris Yelland. He's an energy analyst.
Yeah.
And he reckons the week-on-week energy availability factor of Eskom SA's fleet of power stations dropped to a new record low of 56.76% in week one of 2020, down from 61% in week one of 2019.
Fantastic. So it's just getting worse, actually.
Worse. So it's here to stay, and just be grateful when the lights are on for any length.
I mean, so one of the things I want to bring up is the unplanned outage, or the breakdowns, the unplanned and unexpected breakdowns along with maintenance. Set at 13,600 on Tuesday. Now, usually, or last year in April, their aim was to keep that below 9,500 megawatts. So it's like 14,000 megawatts that they are, or 4,000 megawatts that they are over their kind of leeway, which is just ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. Then you've also got like the open cycle gas turbines that are running, which use diesel to run. It's just a mess. It's a complete mess.
You know what I can't wait for? When we start hearing news of the open cycle gas turbines
breaking down, yeah.
Just running them so hard. They're supposed to be used in an emergency.
Yeah, very limited time.
An emergency, but it's just a matter of time before those don't get the maintenance they need and they start breaking down. And then we're all completely screwed. Sorry for the negative start to 2020, but come on.
But well, we've got some positive news, though. There was some positive news this morning or Wednesday morning. I keep thinking this is being released on Friday,
yeah.
Not Wednesday. So if I say today, I mean Wednesday. The matric results were released on Wednesday morning, and there is good news. It is the highest pass rate for 25 years, I believe. 81.3% pass rate, which is really good.
Is this because we have really smart students or because the standards have just dropped?
Well, I mean, it's a bit of both, I would assume.
Yay, South Africa winning at something.
So, 81.3%. It's a 3.1 percentage point increase on 2018's pass rate, which is really good. Free State was actually the province with the highest pass rate with 88.4%. And Limpopo is still the worst performing province with a pass rate of 73.2%, which is an improvement. The only province that actually dropped in its pass rate is Gauteng, which dropped from 87.9% to 87.2% from 2018 to 2019. None of the 75 districts in South Africa scored lower than 60% in terms of pass, which is really good. There's improvements happening in that regard, which is really nice. If you haven't got your matric results yet, because you're dreading them, I remember when I got my matric results many eons ago, I like delayed it until like...
I was on a boat.
You were on a boat?
Yeah, I was fishing with my father and grandfather.
Oh, that's nice, because there's no signal on a boat.
Yeah. I can't even remember where I was when I got
here. So, yeah, okay, that's just a couple of headlines from the week so far. We've only been back since Monday, so I'm sure there's a lot has happened. CES is currently on the go. I think it wraps up today. World War III, the Iranian missile strike by the US. We will take a look at everything CES next week. Once everything has completed and all the announcements have been made, I'm looking forward to some new smart appliance. A smart fridge, a smart toilet.
Well, I don't know if you saw Samsung have that like BB-8 inspired little robot.
So what?
A spherical robot.
Yes, I saw that thing.
Bally. Yeah, called Bally.
Bally.
Yeah. Obviously, oh my they're God. Still the name of Wally.
Okay. All right. Let's move on. Let's move on before we get stuck in this quagmire. Dion, you got yourself a new toy for Black Friday.
Well, the whole reason I actually asked to be included on the podcast is exactly that. So last year, Black Friday, I was just keeping my eye out for bargains, and I found one. I've been looking for a VR headset probably for the last two odd years to sort of come down into a price range I'm willing to pay. And 12 grand for the headset alone from a local supplier just kind of put me off, because then I'd still have to buy the base stations. I saw the Samsung Odyssey Plus on Amazon in the US for $230, which is a ridiculously low price. A, it's normally $500. B, it's an all-in-one, so there's no extra sensors required. Basically, everything you need is built into the headset. Okay. And it's a Windows mixed reality headset as opposed to just a straight-up VR headset. But that means it does Windows mixed reality as well as anything to do with Steam VR, because there's a Windows mixed reality plugin for Steam VR, which makes every Steam VR game able to be played on this headset.
Okay.
I'm a journalist, so I've got to be cheap. So I saw this thing.
Frugal, I think is the word.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, frugal, that's the word. So I saw this thing and I thought, you know what, I'd be absolutely stupid to pass this thing up. So I put my money down. It only took a week to get here, for starters, from the US, landed, paid for, import duties and all that stuff. And
that's pretty impressive in and
of
itself.
I was amazed, dude. Like, I watched this thing. I watched the tracking history. And I watched them ship it to this depot, then that depot, then back to the original depot. And I'm thinking, oh, God, this thing's going to take forever to get here. But literally, I placed the order on the Monday. I had it in my hands the following Monday, which just blew my
mind.
That's
crazy.
And you ordered it from which site?
Amazon US.
All right.
Take a lot of Evtech and other South African retailers.
Well, look, in their defense, I phoned around before I even placed the order. And I said, Samsung South Africa, hey, are you guys bringing this thing in? And they were like, the what now?
I'm just talking about delivery times.
Oh, sorry.
That's really what I'm talking about.
Yeah. I've got a Roru delivery. I mean, one of the local e-tailers deliveries that I placed an order on the 20th of November. Still waiting.
Wow. Anyway,
moving on. So I got this thing. A, delivery very impressive. B, the price was incredibly low. Yeah. And then when I actually used it, oh my God, I can't actually explain just how flipping awesome this thing is. It is even better than I was expecting. So I'm a journo, I'm cynical, I'm expecting the worst, kind of, you know, hoping for the best, just to kind of make sure I'm not disappointed. And this thing is better than I had even expected. just in terms of the clarity of the headset, the responsiveness of the motion, also the controllers are very comfortable to use, very responsive. They are used rechargeable batteries, and you know, off you go. And every game I've played has just blown me away. I don't know if you guys have had that experience where you're playing something and it is just so amazing you cannot stop grinning.
Yeah.
I know it sounds like a cliche, but I swear to God, every time I take my headset off, I've got this huge grin on my face and I'm just like, oh, that was amazing. I mean, I say that because I played, one of the first games I played was Arizona Sunshine. So it's a VR game that came out in like 2016 and it's literally all about shooting zombies.
Yeah.
And it's only about 4 or 5 hours long, but I mean, you don't really need a super long VR game because you know, you do get a little bit motion sick or you feel a bit ill after using the thing. I did that, but only to like a minimal extent, so I wasn't feeling too bad. But I enjoyed Arizona Sunshine so much that I literally played for like 4 hours solid. And it's just literally shooting zombies, going to the thing, picking up a key, unlocking the next gate, moving to the next area. And just the experience of, you know, holding what appeared to be guns in my hand and walking up to a zombie and shooting it in the head or shooting in the legs, and then it crawls up to you and then you shoot it in the face as it gets closer. I cannot tell you how satisfying that was. The pop of the head, the splat of the blood, just that, that sense of being there just overwhelmed me like no other game I have ever played before.
So it does make you feel like you are in the game. I hate to use that.
Makes you feel that.
That thing, but
like, you know, you read that in reviews and you think, no, this guy's talking crap.
Yeah, it's like, especially if it's the best way to describe it is you are actually there. It makes you feel like you're in the thing. But
correct. But VR, Dinkum does that. I genuinely felt like I was in the game doing the things. And, it, you know, it can be hairy. Like, I've specifically avoided buying horror games.
Yeah.
I am not playing anything horror-y in VR because it is so intense, even when it's just like a fun casual game.
Yeah.
You stick me in a horror situation, I am going to need a change of underpants. No, thank you.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. I'm a little bit of a wuss. I couldn't even make it through Blair Witch. So no, it's a no for me.
If you struggle in 2D, don't be thinking about doing it in VR. But you know, the reason why this thing is so good is A, it's the second iteration of the Odyssey headset. So it's the Odyssey Plus.
Okay.
The original Odyssey was apparently quite good, but also a little bit janky. The resolution on
it's a first generation product.
Correct. You kind of pay to be a beta tester for those kinds of things. So with this one, they've refined everything. So there's two cameras on the front for motion tracking. So that's
awesome. Do you not need the external sensors?
Correct.
That's cool.
And the AMOLED screens.
Yeah.
1440 by 1600 resolution per eye.
Oh, wow.
And you get ridiculous DPI on this thing. To the point where, like, you know, when the first time I wore a development kit one, I think it was an Oculus, and that screen door effect was ridiculous, where you can almost see like the gaps between the pixels, and it just kind of, it messes with your immersion. You look at this thing and you go, I feel like I'm wearing a headset, this is great.
I feel like I'm just wearing two screens attached to my face.
For sure. With this, I don't notice the pixels. I don't notice any kind of screen door effect.
Wow.
And it's just that smooth and clear. It's not crystal clear. I mean, there's still like, you know, jagged edges on some things and whatnot, because obviously you can't smooth all of those down yet. But it's so good that I stop thinking that I'm wearing a VR headset after a while, especially in Arizona Sunshine. I'm just there in the game, dodging zombies, shooting them in their heads, you know, going around obstacles and that. And I just cannot iterate enough how good this experience is and how I, as a gamer, I mean, I've been playing games for 30 plus odd years, and this, in 2019, 2020, this has been the most phenomenal, amazing gaming experience of my life. I do not say that lightly.
So Dion, sorry to interrupt. I kind of want to ask. So do you think that VR has, with your experience with just this headset, obviously, but do you think it's at a place now where it's actually viable for the ordinary consumer to actually go out and buy something such as this?
I wouldn't say that yet. It's still too expensive.
Okay.
You know, I'd like to see the entry-level headsets come down to about that $230 level, where, you know, it's still a little bit expensive, but it's about the price of a new graphics card.
Yeah. Which I think is a fair price to pay, because you are getting two displays.
Correct.
And all the technology that comes with it. I don't think you should be expecting to pay like 1,000 rand for one of these headsets.
No, that would be a little bit on the low side.
Yeah.
But I mean, when my thing landed, I mean, I chucked a couple of other things in. I think I paid 5,900 rand in total for.
That's really not bad.
Which is not damn bad, considering that's like a mid-range graphics card right now.
Yeah.
So no, I don't think it's entirely mainstream yet, but it is definitely moving towards that. And with the release of Half-Life Alyx, which is coming up in March of this year, I think that is going to propel VR very much into the future. I mean, already Half-Life Alyx was an announced, and Valve, the Valve Index, which is Valve's own VR headset, they sold out. This thing's $1,000 headset in the States. I mean, even for them, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, for us, that's $14,000 before you factor in import duties and delivery and all that kind of stuff. That's a lot of money. But just the news of that alone propelled those sales. And when the game comes out, A, I'm convinced Valve is going to knock it out of the park, because they tend not to release stuff unless it is like super polished. Although, what was that card game of theirs?
Artifact is the exception to the rule, not the rule.
Look, I've got faith in Valve. They, you know, the Half-Life franchise is a juggernaut, even though it is however many years old. And
I mean, CS:GO is still going strong. Correct. Dota is going strong. I mean, like, I have faith that they will do a good game.
So with Alex being like a flagship VR product, I am convinced, and you know, call me on this later if it flops, but I'm convinced it's going to be good enough that it is going to inspire a lot of VR headset purchases.
You mentioned the AAA kind of titles. What about like indie stuff? Is there a lot of indie titles on VR?
There are a ton of VR titles out, and they're generally quite cheap. I know it's Steam and we get the local conversion, and it's a lot cheaper than in the US, but Boneworks, also one of the best VR games to have come out in the last month. I think it came out in the last month. Incredibly immersive, Half-Life-like story, tons of guns to play with, melee weapons, all that stuff. R175.
That's not bad.
I think it's like the equivalent of a $40 game in the States. But for us, it's R175. It is dirt cheap. I bought a bunch of the Serious Sam games because they all now come in VR, and that was cheapest chips for like the whole collection. Fallout 4 VR, I think you picked that up for about $300-$400 these days.
How was that? Because I've heard mixed reports.
Fantastic. No, don't believe anybody. That was incredible.
Okay.
I felt like I was there. I mean, I know it's a cliche and I've said it before, but genuinely that's what I felt like. And I've played Fallout 4. This is like my third or fourth playthrough, and I'm still enjoying it. And just that whole VR element of feeling like that person you're talking to is in front of you and you can reach out and touch them.
Yeah.
You just can't beat it. Like, I don't know if I can go back to 2D Fallout. Let's put it that way.
So I've got one question for you.
Sure.
With the benefit of hindsight, would you pay, obviously you got this on discount, which is kind of part of the reason why you purchased it, but now that you've actually paid it and enjoyed it a lot, would you pay the full price for it?
Yes. No, no doubt. This thing is worth $499. I mean, what's that? It's about 7,500 Rand, probably closer to 10 once it's landed. Still worth every cent.
Right.
I mean, honestly, God, I'm talking to you now, I have goosebumps. Just thinking back to the experiences I've had over the December break, just playing this small selection of games, it is that good. I mean, Google Earth VR, completely free, but it's Google Earth in virtual reality. Even just like using the controllers to drag yourself around the planet and watching the cities pop to life, it's just phenomenal. I've not had an experience like this before. And I look forward to just watching this get even better. I mean, as the panels get higher resolution, you know, computers get more powerful, the developers get au fait with the development tools, VR has got a very bright future, in my opinion.
So I just have two questions.
Sure.
So the first one is about fatigue. Like, wearing this headset, do you feel fatigued after using it for like 4 hours?
I don't know if I'd say fatigued, but there is some discomfort. The design of this particular headset, it doesn't have a strap that goes over your head. So it basically goes around your head.
Okay.
Like your crown.
Okay.
And where it touches my head, I do find I do get quite uncomfortable. And if the game I'm playing isn't like hooking me in at the moment, I become more aware of that than I do of the game. But there's a bunch of like third-party straps you can buy to actually alleviate the weight of the thing on that particular spot.
Well, that's cool.
And the default, I don't know what you call it. It's a VR cover that goes around the edges of the headset that like, blocks out the light and that. The default one is a little bit hard, but you can buy, there's one particularly called the VR cover. I think it's like $30.
Okay.
That makes it a little bit more comfortable. It absorbs the sweat a bit better. And yes, I do sweat quite a bit while playing these things.
So, and then my other question is about the performance of games. Obviously, you've got quite a beefy rig.
I do.
But what has the performance been like in terms of playing these actual games?
Well, the headset panels, the panels that you look at, they support a refresh rate of up to 90 hertz.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I haven't done any benchmarks, so I can't tell you that everything
is obviously, I'm just kind of gauging your experience.
But it's one-to-one. Like, I never feel like I move my head and there's like a slight delay before everything comes up. So I think that's a big thing about VR. You've got to get that right. Otherwise, the person playing is going to feel exceptionally nauseous.
Exactly.
I haven't noticed that at all.
Okay.
But at the same time, I also haven't noticed that the graphics are super cutting edge.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of a cartoonish look to them. Like it was Unreal Engine from a few generations back, so it doesn't look super realistic.
Yeah.
The most realistic game I've played so far is something called Hellsplit Arena.
Okay.
This is that you literally get teleported into an arena, you get melee weapons, and then you get to beat zombies on the head.
Okay.
And those graphics are about the best.
Okay.
Best part of that game, and this is super flippin' cool, I can literally walk up to a zombie, grab his head, punch him in the heart, grab his heart,
oh my
pull it
gosh.
Out, and hold it up to my face. And
I think Dion has some latent aggressive.
But honestly, God, that was the best part about that game. I killed myself laughing the first time I saw that.
Cool. Right. So VR. Very, we'll look forward to it in the future, basically.
I give it two thumbs way two up, thumbs and I way. Can't wait to see where we're going with it.
I'm keen to see where the future of this tech goes, because, I mean, like you say, I think the price definitely needs to come down before it has any hope of going mainstream, quote-unquote. But, yeah, I do sort of, I have been keeping up with it myself, kind of just looking at where the technology is going and how games are being developed. And I do kind of think that we're getting to a space where it's actually now a viable thing to get a VR headset and be able to sit down and play games. Even if you do spend a lot of money on it, I think you're now less of a beta tester and more of like a final beta before release tester.
I would agree with that, yeah.
Cool. So, from VR, gory VR games, to gory Netflix series / games. So, The Witcher, released on 20th of December. On Netflix, the original series based on the books, directed by Lauren Hisrich. I'm sorry,
a Polish surname.
She's not. I don't think she's Polish. It's we're talking about the showrunner now, not the writer of the books, who is Anton. And you see that name, I cannot remember off the top of my head. Anyway, so let's talk about the series very quickly. So the series kicks off with... Okay, so the first thing you need to know is it follows the book The Last Wish very closely. Even though it does chop and change between books, the series is based on the books, not the video games. The video games actually, as far as I know, pick up after the books have completed. Because as far as I'm aware, Geralt dies at the end of the book. Sorry, spoilers.
What?
They've been out for ages.
What?
They've been out for ages.
They seem to tell me Harry Potter dies or something.
Where's your spoiler?
What?
Tag?
Harry Potter dies? He doesn't. Dumbledore does, though. Oh, sorry. Okay, so it's based on the books by Andrzej Sapkowski.
Apologies.
Sorry, dude. I messed up your name. Okay, so we start off, the series starts off with Geralt fighting a monster, which we later learn is a Kikimora, and we follow him and a couple of other people. So we're introduced to Geralt, we're introduced to Ciri, we are not introduced to Yennefer yet, but the first episode we're introduced to Geralt and Ciri, and kind of it sets the basis for where we're going from there. I won't spoil the story. I think it's well worth a watch, even if you aren't a fan of The Witcher. If you're a fan of the series, I highly recommend you watch it. But yeah, so I want to talk a bit about my impressions of the series, because going into this, I was very, very worried about how they were going to translate the world of The Witcher into a Netflix series, because it's not the easiest thing to do. Anybody that's read the books or has played the games knows that this world is incredibly deep and incredibly vast, and trying to bring that into a series could be very difficult. It would be the equivalent of trying to fit all three Lord of the Rings books into one movie. But I think Lauren Hisrich is her, how you say her name? Hisrich. Lauren Hisrich did a fantastic, fantastic job, as did the entire cast. So just to run through the cast very quickly, we have Henry Cavill as Geralt of Rivia. Freya Allen plays Cirilla. We have, her name is Anya Shalotra, who plays Yennefer of Vengerberg. And then I think one of the other main characters you need to know is Anna Shafter, who plays Triss Merigold. I think those are the three main folks that you want to focus on, the main characters, if you will. And for the most part, they do a good job. The only issue I have is how Triss's character is written. So Triss, in the early stages of the series, is presented as this really powerful sorceress that works with King Foltest, and she helps Geralt slay a Striga, which is a princess, or a princess has been cursed and her baby is formed into a Striga, or becomes a Striga. And she helps Geralt fight this, essentially. Well, she doesn't take part in the fight, but she helps him, like, identify and helps him prepare, all that sort of stuff. So we get this impression that Triss is really, really strong, especially given the fact that we are introduced to Yennefer an episode earlier, and she's rather weak. She's just becoming a mage. And then at the end of the series, in the second to last episode, there's a big battle that takes place. And Triss actually kind of fails. Like, she doesn't do very well. She almost, like, falls in battle. And there's a scene where Yennefer is walking and you see Triss is, like, nearly dead. And I'm just like, I understand that Yennefer is the stronger between the two, but she's just played as such a weak character in my mind, which I don't necessarily like. Like, I have no issues with the person who was cast. I know a lot of people have an issue that Triss is played by a person of color. I don't really care about that. I just have an issue with the fact that she was portrayed as this really weak person. But never mind. The rest of the casting is done really, really well. Geralt is fantastic. I think Henry Cavill does a really good job of portraying Geralt, even though my heart was set on Mads Mikkelsen playing that role.
Yeah, I think a lot of people's hearts are.
I mean, he's really good. Like, he does, he gets across the kind of dry humor that Geralt has really well. And then he has this emotional sort of, this emotional side to him that, while a lot of people say that, like, even in the books and series, people go on about how witches are stripped of emotions and all that sort of stuff. But even in the games, Geralt does have emotion for the people that he cares about. And when those people kind of are in danger or they annoy him, that emotion comes out, which is really, really, and I think Cavill does a really good job of that. Yennefer, I think, is possibly the most perfect casting in this entire series, from the first moment we meet her through to the end of the season. She's possibly my favorite. I wish that we had spent a bit more time with her alone before Geralt and her meet with the djinn and the wishes that he needs to make. I do wish they had spent a bit more time on her, because she is a fascinating character in and of herself. Overall, the series is really, really good. One thing that it did make me do is want to play the Witcher series or the Witcher 3 all over again, which I did in fact do, including the two expansions, Hearts of Stone and Blood and Wine. And something that I realized while playing the game was how good of a job Lauren and the entire team that worked on the series actually did. Just the way that Geralt is portrayed, the way that the politics are portrayed in the series, the law of surprise that comes up. If you don't know what any of these are, watch the show and you will understand. They just did a really good job of translating this world into something that you want to know more about. The downside of that is that there are only 8 episodes in the season, and the next one is only slated to release in 2021. So we've got quite a wait between now and then. But I do think that it's worth that wait, because everything is just, the costumes are fantastic. The CG, with the exception of the dragon episode, is really, really good. There's some really great practical effects, some really great costume design, some really great dialogue that takes place. Like, there's a scene where Geralt talks to Roach and has a one-on-one conversation with Roach, and it's actually...
Oh, Roach is his horse, by the way.
Roach is his horse. Roach is, like, he's having this conversation with his horse about his first monster, and it's so heartwarming and sort of funny and tongue-in-cheek that you can't help but smile while you listen to it. So there's little moments like that that take place throughout the series. Ciri's story is... it's okay. I mean, this is kind of setting up Ciri. We don't know why everybody wants her. We don't know why she's so powerful. But it's setting up the story for her and Geralt meeting, and then her story playing out from there, which I believe is kind of where the show is going to go. It's going to tell the story of Ciri and hopefully culminate in I hope, what happened in The Witcher 3. The same sort of thing with the Wild Hunt chasing her. I don't know if that's going to happen, but my hope is that, because I think the Wild Hunt and that story arc would make a really great engrossing TV series. So The Witcher on Netflix is, I highly recommend it if you have not watched it yet. If you have not watched it yet and you're wondering why everybody's singing Toss a Coin to Your Witcher, O Valley of Plenty.
Such a catchy song. And then putting out covers why. Of it on YouTube.
Yeah. We'll actually put a few covers that I've discovered since that song is released at the bottom of this podcast for you to listen to, as well as the original, which I just can't get enough of it. It's so catchy. The Witcher series is fantastic. And then also as an aside to this, once after the series had been released and a couple of days after its release, The Witcher 3 actually became one of the most popular games on Steam. Four years after release? What was the
almost,
top thing you've
almost
got to say?
5 years after its release, and it hit more than 100,000 concurrent players.
Which is crazy for a single player game. All those other games that are in Steam's top 10 most played games are multiplayer games.
It's the fifth most popular game on Steam.
Yeah. At the time. I mean, the only other one that is could be single player, I think, is Football
GTA.
Manager? GTA 5 is multiplayer. I mean, all of these games are multiplayer, which is the only one that has no multiplayer whatsoever. I highly recommend you play it if you haven't played it, especially Blood and Wine. That story, the only problem with Blood and Wine is that it is too short. It should have been longer. But yeah, so the series kind of inspired people to pick up the game again, which I think is really, really cool.
Yeah.
And going back and playing that, I understand now, again, why I considered one of the best games.
I actually went back and started playing the original Witcher.
Oh, wow.
From 2007, 2008. I mean, they put out an enhanced edition, and I haven't played that one, so that's what I'm going through at the moment. It hasn't aged as well. I mean, it doesn't play as nicely as 2 and 3 do.
I mean, it was made on Neverwinter Nights.
Neverwinter Nights Engine, that's correct.
Gee,
yeah.
I mean, I haven't heard that name in years.
Yeah, for sure. I'm just glad people are getting into The Witcher. I mean, the more people with more awareness of it, the more money for the developer, the more money for future projects.
And honestly, like, it's an incredible world to explore, not just from Geralt's perspective, but like the monsters and the politics that take place and all that sort of stuff. So I hope that people pick up the books, because I think the books are really, really, really worth reading. A couple of them have not yet been translated into English, but there are fan projects where they do translate the Polish version of the books into English, so I'm sure you can find those, but your experience may be mixed compared to the official English translation. So yeah, The Witcher on Netflix, I think it's possibly the best thing that Netflix has done, to be quite honest.
Isn't it the biggest show in the world right now?
Yeah, I think it was their second most viewed show for 2019.
That's quite incredible considering what it's only released when?
Yeah, right at the end of December. So, I mean, I think it's well worth a watch. If you were worried about things like, there is some social commentary there, like woman empowerment. I think that is a very big focus, but I think that's a focus throughout the entire Witcher series, is like the women are equal or more powerful than men in most cases. So I think there's some nice social commentary there. I think it's for everybody, even though it is violent. There is a lot of violence in it, but not as much as Game of Thrones by any stretch of the imagination. So if you love fantasy and you want to explore a new world, I highly recommend The Witcher. And yeah, that's it from me, my obsession with The Witcher. We're now going to have a chat with Helen Vermey, who is the brand manager for Microsoft at Pinnacle. Robin, you did that interview. What is she actually going to be talking about?
Yeah, we chatted about Windows 7 and the fact that end-of-life support is happening on the 14th of January.
Yeah,
so next week, if you haven't updated, you're in trouble.
Prepare for the big warnings telling you that you really have to. It's going to annoy people into doing it.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope people do it, because I'm so sick and tired of people. Oh, so I've got this problem with Windows. What version is it? 7. So yeah, we're going to cut to that interview very quickly with Helen, and we'll be right back.
What does upgrading your PCs from Windows 7 to Windows 10 mean? When upgrading your environment to the latest version of Windows, there might be some important questions you could have, such as, how long will it take to upgrade my devices? How do I free up space for the upgrade? Why must I uninstall some of my apps during the upgrade? Will my Windows 7 apps work on Windows 10? To help make your upgrade as painless and efficient as possible, it is recommended that you contact your reseller to assist and advise you. Contact Pinnacle today for assistance.
Hi, this is Robin Lucetti reporting for Hypertext, and joining me today is Helen Vermeer. Helen is the brand manager of Microsoft here at Pinnacle, and today we're discussing Windows 7 and end of life, which is just around the corner. So Helen, thanks for joining us, and before we get into things, if you could perhaps just go over your role here at Pinnacle, what you oversee?
Okay, so I oversee all of the Microsoft, which is a full package product, which is what you find in your retail stores, and it comes with a disc, or well, these days nothing comes with a disc, so you get a little key, you download it off the internet, and you load it on your machine. So, and that, and then also on the DSP side, which is for your operating system and for both your desktops and also for your servers, and look after that as well.
Correct. And I'm assuming, considering we are essentially less than a week away from Windows 7 end of life, it's been a very big consideration, something that Pinnacle has been worried about for quite some time now.
Absolutely. We are going crazy with the Windows 10 Pro at the moment, so it is actually, I'm glad to see that people are taking the information that Windows 7 is end of servicing, and it is going to be a lot safer for them to go with Windows 10.
Perfect. So I guess that kind of brings us to the subject matter at hand. What does end of life actually mean for local businesses?
Okay, so they should be taking a good look at the moment at their current desktop infrastructure, because if they are still running on Windows 7, then it is going to be a huge issue for their security, because they're not going to be getting any updates anymore. They won't be getting any threat patches. They'll be getting absolutely nothing. So it is maybe time for them to really seriously consider doing a hardware upgrade and getting themselves some Windows 10 Pro.
Perfect. And we obviously mentioned that it's just around the corner. So when is end of life support actually at?
On the 14th of January, 2020, which is next week, a few days away.
So I guess my next question would be, say, for example, if someone's listening to this either a couple of days before end of life or perhaps even past end of life, what does that mean? What kind of risks are they running into then?
Well, the thing is, for any business, your biggest asset is your, apart from your staff, obviously, is your data. And if you don't have anything that is securing your network or your data, you're going to be sitting with huge issues of data theft, perhaps some ransomware, and all these wonderfully horrible issues that you actually encounter when you are running without any kind of virus protection. So you'll be getting your viruses, they'll be coming through, there'll be no patches for new threats. So that is a huge issue when it comes to your business. You don't want to be taken to ransom, so you don't want to lose money, and that's a huge financial risk, huge security risk, and it's something that they really need to take seriously.
Perfect. So I guess now the migration is happening and upgrading to Windows 10. Just in terms of that, what are some of the key advantages? You kind of mentioned security as being a big one, but what are some of the key advantages?
You know what, this new Windows 10 is amazing. I mean, the last one that I used was this good was actually Windows 95. I mean, that sounds terrible. Right, so that was 100 million years ago. Yes, I am an industry dinosaur, so that's fine. But the speed now with Windows 10, the speed on your startup and the speed while you're working is phenomenal. So you're looking at almost, and it doesn't sound like a lot of time, but you're looking at almost like 80 seconds, which is a minute and a half, faster than what it was on previous versions. So, I mean, those little minutes and a half take a lot of time when you're starting up in the morning, and it really makes a huge difference. Then the new start menu is great because it comes in tiles, and you can actually personalize it for your own, you know, for your own system, or your own applications that you use continuously. So they're always there, and you can just do whatever it is that you need to make that your own. The universal apps, so you've got the App Store, it's right there, so it's available to you on your system through Windows 10. Mm-hmm. You can just go and get your Vizio or your, or actually I prefer you've got that from me, but you can go and get your Vizio, get your project. You can get that downloaded onto your machine, pay for it, get it done, and it's right there and ready for you.
Perfect.
Touch.
Yeah.
So there's another one, touch. So the new modern devices have got touch screens.
Yeah.
And if you're not running on Windows 10, you're not going to be able to use those use those functions on your machine. So Windows 10 allows you to do all the fancy touch and everything else. So that's a few. There are a lot more, but that's a couple for you.
Perfect. And I guess one of the issues that businesses will be thinking about when migrating is how long the process would take. Is it a fairly simple process to undertake?
Well, it is a fairly simple process as long as your hardware can manage the Windows 10. If it is compatible with Windows 10 and you're running currently on Windows 7 Pro, it's very easy for us just to do an upgrade to the new version of Windows 10 Pro. But if you're not running a machine that's compatible with Windows 10, then you may have to look at a complete hardware infrastructure replace. So that is going to take a little bit of time.
Is that an element that Pinnacle assists with, just in terms of assessing hardware and seeing what needs?
Well, we can definitely assist him with that. We can assist him with that, but we don't sell directly to consumers. Mm-hmm. We do it through a reseller channel. So we can assist you with what it is you need, and then we can help to recommend a reseller to assist you with the full migration.
Perfect. And obviously the topic is end-of-life support. So if I'm a business and I'm moving now to Windows 10, how long will it be before I start to worry about end-of-life in the Windows 10?
Well, I don't have any visibility on any new versions of an operating system. Microsoft have said that Windows 10 is the last one that they're ever going to do, and all they're going to do is just add little bits. You know, you'll get patches or keep adding new features, and even said it'll always be Windows 10. So I wouldn't be concerned about the lack of support or running out of support in anytime soon.
Yes, yeah, so I'm assuming it's going to be something that's going to be here for the foreseeable future.
Absolutely.
Sure. And so obviously you've been dealing with a lot of local clients in terms of their migration. What has those kind of processes been like so far?
Well, so far everyone has actually gone through any migration or any change to any IT infrastructure is painful.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to the upgrading of from previous versions of Windows, like Windows Pro, it has gone very, very smoothly. It's obviously you're going to have some downtime, you do it through the server, you push it out to all the machines, and then the following day, everyone's running on Windows 10. Ours went very smoothly. Mm-hmm. We didn't have a single issue. I had Windows 7 the one day, and then the next day I had Windows 10. It was like, oh wow, this is interesting. And that was 2 years ago already.
Yeah.
So it's been quite a while, and it was very smooth. Didn't have any issues.
And I'm assuming as we are almost essentially on the doorstep of that end-of-life support, I'm assuming a lot of businesses are now scrambling to get this process.
I think a lot of people have been quite good with it. Mm-hmm. They've done a lot of planning, and they have already been doing it over the last year and a half. We find consumers at the moment are actually buying Windows 10 Pro machines as opposed to Windows 10 Home machines because they have the security element at home. So they're doing it. So that's increased incredibly. So we're getting more consumers buying Pro.
Perfect. And obviously, we don't want to start fear-mongering and those kind of things, but for those businesses that might be saying, you know what, I don't need to upgrade, I don't need to migrate, what would you kind of convince them to make that change?
I would say yes, you do.
Mm.
You know, the thing is that there's so many hackers out there, and there are so many threats that we get daily on our machines. And even if you've got a flippin' high-standing, amazing security system, these clever little people still manage to get through it somehow. Mm-hmm. So security must be your focus. At home, at work, it's got to be your focus. So I would say get yourself onto Windows 10 Pro and do it now.
So I'll be right in saying that the security elements within Windows 10 Pro are able to kind of handle the more sophisticated intrusion methods, right?
Absolutely.
Perfect. I guess, is there anything else you'd like to mention, perhaps by Windows 10 making the migration?
I would just say that it is, you know, we've come a long way with Windows, and there's a lot of changes that have been made, and there's a lot of brilliant, brilliant applications that are within the Windows 10 Pro operating system. Mm-hmm. And it's something that's going to assist regardless of whether you are a student, working at home, or whether you are working in a corporate environment. I would suggest that you get onto it like now, because it really is the best one I've ever seen.
Perfect, yeah. Thanks again for your time, Helen. So what we will do is add links to Pinnacle at the bottom of this podcast. So if you're interested in migrating for your business or perhaps anything else that Pinnacle might have to offer, you can contact them there. So thanks again, Helen, for your time. Really appreciate it.
And just one more thing.
Yes.
The guys can actually email us if they need assistance with any kind of migration at microsoft@pinnacle.co.za.
Perfect. We'll add that link as well. Perfect. Thanks again.
Okay.
Upgrading to Windows 10 will keep your PCs running smoothly and securely. You're most probably wondering what the benefits of moving to Windows 10 would be, other than being forced to do so, as your PCs would be vulnerable on the unsupported Windows 7. There are three distinct benefits when upgrading to Windows 10. You'll get built-in Windows Defender antivirus to protect against malware and spyware. There are some great user experience updates, and most importantly, Windows 10 offers automatic product updates by default to keep your system secure moving forward. To find out more, contact Pinnacle today.
Thanks for that interview, Robin. Appreciate that. Very interesting. Remember, end of life for Windows 7 is 14th of January. Upgrade to Windows 10, please.
Promptly.
It is very good. Like, I don't know why people... I don't like... It's really fantastic. I have not had a problem. I've had one blue screen of death, and it was my own fault.
The jokes on the internet are, you only like Windows 10 if you don't like freedom and...
Yeah.
You know which is a good operating system? Windows 8.
No.
You know what was fantastic?
Correct. No.
Let's not even mention Windows Vista. But yeah.
I like to call it Windows Vista.
That's going to do it from us for this week, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back next week to chat about all things CES 2020, see what was released and what we can expect in the year to come in terms of electronics. But for now, that's going to do it from us. From myself, Brendan Lotz, cheerio. From Robin Chetty,
cheers.
And from Dion Duplessis,
cheers, everyone.
We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
The number you have dialed is not in service at this time.